Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm doing a memorial for jazz singer Carol Etman by rebroadcasting what I believe is the last interview that Carol gave before her very, very untimely death. And I'm playing a number of songs, both from her CD Experiment and then one that's just piano vocal, pure Carol. So hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive.
Hello, and welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is all about discovering and becoming who you really are. And if you've been listening, you know that I believe that most of us are keeping secrets about who we really are. Not only keeping those secrets from other people, but keeping those secrets from ourselves. That we have qualities, abilities, aspects, capabilities, memories, creativity, courage. Some things that we're not demonstrating. That we don't actually know we have, but we do. And so when people say, well, I can't help that, that's just the way I am, I always think to myself, well, that's part of who you are, but there's more. And this show is about helping you discover that more. And one of the ways that I do that is by my series, Anatomy of an Artist, in which I interview people who make their living or their life with their art. And the reason that I do that is because people who make their living or their life with their art in our society are people who, at least in terms of their work, are exactly who they are. You cannot choose to be an artist in this culture. A singer, a dancer, a writer, an actor, a director, fine artist, unless you actually have to be, unless it is congruent to you, unless it is who you are. So I interview those people so that you can hear what it sounds like when someone is actually who they really are. And today, I am playing an interview with someone who was always exactly who she really was. My friend, the amazing jazz singer and musician, Carol Etman, who we lost earlier this year. When you listen to this interview, be alerted to the moment that she says that she came from the land of yes. It's one of the most lovely things I've ever heard anyone say. And because Carol believed she came from the land of yes, she saw yes everywhere. She was open to everything. And not only in the earlier experiences of her life, which you will hear all about, but when she embraced her real love, her love of singing, her love of music, her love of jazz, she embraced it in a way that a lot of people don't. Carol was always looking for the unknown song, for the special song, for the song that other people didn't sing. She was always bringing us more than we might have expected to get. I'm going to play, I don't know, 3-4 songs, maybe even 5, in this show, before and after the interview. And I'm going to start with the title song from her CD called Experiment. And the song is Experiment. It's there are a number of songs here that I had never heard before, and this is one of them. But this song says who Carol Etman really was. She was someone who was always on the edge and always experimenting. So I'm going to start with that song, Experiment. And then I'm going to play another song that I also didn't know, This Happy Madness. And then I'm going to play her interview. And after that, probably I'm going to play a couple more. So here is Carol Etman doing Experiment. What, of course, she was always doing.
Before you leave these portals to reach less fortunate mortals, there's just one final message I would give to you. We all have learned reliance on the sacred teachings of science, and I hope you like you never will decline in spite of Philistine defiance to do what all good scientists do. Experiment. Make it your motto day and night. Experiment. And it will lead you to the light. The apple on the top of the tree is never too high to achieve. Just take an example from me. Experiment, be curious. Though interfering friends may frown, yet furious at each attempt to put you down. If this advice you'll only employ, the future can offer you infinite joy. Experiment, experiment, and you will see. Make it your motto day and night, and it will lead you top of the tree is never too high to achieve. Just take an example from me. Experiment, be curious. Though interfering friends may frown, get furious at each attempt to put you down. If this advice you'll only employ, the future can offer you infinite joy. And merriment, experiment, and you will see. What should I call this happy madness that I feel inside of me? Some kind of wild October gladness that I never thought I'd see. What has become of all my sadness, all my endless lonely sighs? Where are my sorrows? Now. decided that I don't know what to do. What do I care if I'm a juvenile? I'll smile my secret little smile, because I know the change in me is you. What did I call this happy madness? All this unexpected joy that turned my world into a baby's bouncing toy. The gods are laughing far above. One of them gave a little shove, and I forgave me madly.
Straight from the land of yes is Carol Ettman.
Okay, so I am sitting here now with Carol Ettman. So what I like to know is pretty much anything you want to say about what it's like, what it's been like, where it started, where you got the idea, how long you're doing it, how you got in it, whether it's been good for you, whether you would rather have done something else. Really, anything about what it means to try and make a living as a singer, as a player.
Okay. Do you know that I didn't always make a living at it?
No, I didn't.
Oh, I had a real job also.
Yeah. You had a day gig?
I have a degree in marketing.
Oh, do you? Oh my God, I had no idea.
Yeah. So that's, I was in radio, TV, newspapers, every kind of media you can imagine. And I produced a talk show in St. Louis on the must-buy station, KMOX Radio. I was the assistant to the general manager, and then I was the program director. And I switched jobs a lot when I was younger, just as I moved a lot when I was younger. All in St. Louis. But I did it because maybe it's a little ADHD, but, you know, you do something for a while.
You get bored.
And then you say, okay, next. Mm-hmm. What else is there? You know, teach me something new. Okay, I've learned pretty much what I'm going to learn about this, so let's do something else. But anyway, I was in that, and then I was also a director of marketing for a couple of companies in St. Louis. So, you know, that was the daytime thing, and in 82 I said, I don't want to do this anymore, and I quit. And then I didn't do much for a while, and then started singing more regularly.
Well, were you singing before?
Yes. Very regularly. I was working 6, 7, 8 gigs a week while I was working. I was 17, maybe, when it started on a professional level. I was just out of high school.
So you were working day and night?
Mm-hmm. Because I wanted to.
Yeah.
That first job was with a big band on the Admiral Riverboat in St. Louis, which was a huge, 3,000 people on the ballroom floor they could handle. It was a huge, and I sang with the big band. I knew nothing about jazz. You know, I was the chick singer.
Yeah.
And in those days, you had the band and you had the singer. And I did that for about 8 years. During the week, 2 nights a week, and on Saturdays and Sundays, the matinee cruise.
Did you come knowing songs? Did you have to learn songs?
To this day, I don't know how I know what I know. I think, first of all, I'm sure I can owe a good deal of it to my parents. My dad played guitar and violin and accordion and, I don't know, banjos, thing like that. My mother played piano. They both sang. My dad had a great voice. He did some recording, but, you know, that's long by the wayside. And when we were together, his side of the family and my mother's side, everybody either sang or played something. So it was always a musicale, as it were, mm-hmm. you know, of questionable. everybody did it. We had fun. So I was always around it. Mm-hmm. I wish one of them would have been a Charlie Parker fan, mm-hmm. or a Carmen McRae fan, but not so.
Yeah.
So there was no
So what
jazz
were they
involved.
Listening to?
And they liked the big bands, mm-hmm. you know, Benny Goodman and Glenn Miller and all that. And then whatever was popular at the time. I remember my dad, my first recording. This doesn't mean professional, of course, but mm-hmm. just my first time my voice was on record. I was 7 years old, and I sang a duet with my dad playing guitar, and it was my sweet little Alice Blue Gown.
Oh.
I still have it. I still have all that on CD now. It's been transferred to cassette and then to CD, you know. It's kind of comical. But I can actually hear some development,
yeah.
which is not to say that I'm anywhere near where I'd like to be, but I can hear the development. It's fun. It was a fun thing. So I'm very grateful to have been around it from the day I was born.
Do you have siblings?
I'm an only child, and we have no children. So I have plenty of everything to myself.
Yeah.
And hence a popular little nasty little girl.
You think so?
You know, who can't be spoiled when you're the only one that there is to pay attention to?
Yeah, but that can be a wonderful thing.
Oh, it was. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
And I wasn't really spoiled that much, very honestly. I'm glad about that, too.
So did they give you music lessons?
They tried. My father bought my mother a piano for an anniversary present when I was 6. And I started plunking around on it. Mm-hmm. And then they noticed that I even found some chords and I could play melodies of all the songs that he and I had been singing together. And so for my 7th birthday, they put me in a car with blinders, or a blindfold. And it was a big surprise. And boy, I was like really excited. And we got there, and they kept the blindfold on. Walked me into this wherever at the time I didn't know. And then they said, okay, now. And they took the blindfold off. And here was, at the time, the best-known pianist in St. Louis, or one of two best known, and my present was piano lessons, which I did not want.
I'll bet.
Did not want them. Of course, they had, you know, the best of intentions.
Right.
So I stayed that, and I did that, and I went home and practiced and a little bit, and went back the second time, hating it.
Yeah.
And the third time, I worked myself into a 102 fever.
Ah, yeah.
I didn't want to go so bad.
Right.
And so that was the end of lessons. I had two lessons when I was 7. And then after high school, I went to the St. Louis Institute of Music, where a lot of really good musicians went, all of whom could read and had lessons, and I didn't. But in those days, I was completely fearless. And I said, well, I know this one tune, When Sunday Gets Blue. I can play that on the piano. So I went in, and I figured, well, you know, what's to lose?
Right. You auditioned with it?
In front of the whole faculty. But see, it didn't mean anything.
No, I understand.
You know,
I
was maybe 16 years old, and there were other things going on. I thought this would be a hoot, because this is where the musicians hang out. It'd be kind of fun to be there.
Well, but there's another thing, and I suspect it's part of that only child thing, is that you had a lot of permission.
Oh, yes.
You know.
Very good, yes.
Right, you know.
That's
so
very, very true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of that sticks with me to this day.
Yeah.
I'm pretty fearless. I went in, and I sat there, and I thought, I was about number 7 on the list, and people are playing Tchaikovsky, and they're singing arias, and I thought, oh my goodness, what on earth, what am I doing here? Good grief. For a split second, then I thought, well, I'm here.
Yeah.
So they called my name, and I walked up on the stage. This is in one of those choir-type rooms, mm-hmm. with theater seating. And, of course, the whole faculty was Madame Sorrell, all these people, you know, are sitting at the top. And I sat down, and I played When Sunny Gets Blue, and I heard these chuckles. Who expected that?
All right.
But they admitted me.
Did you sing as well, or you just played?
No, I just played it. And this is a bad habit, or, let's say, a character trait, but a lot of times I do it for the game and not for the end goal.
Oh, how interesting.
Yeah.
Can I do this? Can I pull this off?
Yes. Although I didn't realize at the time, but I know that that's what I do.
Yeah, so you have self-awareness of that now.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. And I know that's what I've done most of my life.
Right.
So they admitted me, and 6 months later, I quit. Because they tried to I signed up for piano lessons, and I'd practice, and I'd come and play, and he'd say, "What are you playing?" It's right here. There's the music right in front of me. He said, "Yes, but you're not playing it." I said, "I'm not?" And he said, "No." He said, "You're following your ears." So once again, you know, 6 months I was gone. And sadly, I must say that if anyone is listening to your show and wants to be able to play jazz or pop or anything like that, take those lessons and stick with them.
Learn
because that really is, well, it's not the reading so much as that's where it comes from. Jazz comes from classical. It's in every classical piece. Mm-hmm. The ideas, but no one explained that to me. They just said, "You have to learn this in order to do this." And I said, "Oh, no, I don't. I'm leaving."
Yeah, right.
Now I would, of course, do it.
So you've got something that I also have. They call it oppositional defiance.
Mm-hmm.
They say black and your mind is giving you white. Whatever it is, right?
That's
you
right.
Get that right. Yeah. Yeah. It's a challenge because we have to get everything ourselves then.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
You know.
That's very true. And again, out of self-awareness, I say it's true because when I was doing it, I didn't realize, but I've, over the years, noticed the pattern.
Yeah, yeah. Well, okay, so then did you go to school for marketing, or you just had a talent for that?
I had a degree from the Southwest Missouri State.
Well, so you got through school.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, did you decide you wanted to be in marketing, or
no.
Was that went to school?
No, but it was advertising that interested me, the creativity of it all, and I knew someone in the business. I went with her to her agency, which was Winnius Sanborn, and the Sanborn being the father of David Sanborn, who was a very good friend, and who is a good friend to this day. But I saw what went on there. I didn't know anything about advertising. That word meant really not much to me, and saw the processes and the creative, and I thought, this is really great. You know, the graphics and the writing and the getting to know the client and the product, et cetera. So that's really why I did it.
And you had a facility for it.
I guess.
Yeah.
It's not in me to do something I don't like or that I don't think I can accomplish on at least an intermediate satisfactory level.
To please yourself. Either,
exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Unless it's, of course, mandatory for whatever
right,
reason.
Yeah.
I mean, if I have to sell pencils because the economy goes to hell,
that's
a whole other thing.
Right.
But, and during those years, that's what starts. I met Dave through his dad, because I was there that day.
Wow.
And the very first band I was ever in, Small Combo, was also the first one Dave was ever in.
Oh.
And we were in this rock and roll combo together in St. Louis for about 4 years. And then when he graduated and went to Northwestern, he ended up in a combo with my husband at Northwestern. So we're all still buddies, you know.
So you found advertising and marketing as a thing you thought you might like to do, could do, right? But at the same time, you held on to the music and the...
Always.
Always.
And interestingly, that's why I decided that's probably most of who and what I am. Well, it was Darcy Advertising in St. Louis who has at the time had and still does, and hopefully it will continue to, the Budweiser account, the Anheuser-Busch account. And at that time, in those days, there was one recording studio in St. Louis for that purpose, Jingle Studios, as they were called. But we had an in-house, and my boss loved jazz. Now here, at this point, I'm not in college yet. I'm 18, but I haven't decided I'm going to do that. And on the breaks at lunch, we'd go into the studio, and he'd sit down, and he played by ear really well. And the first jazz song that I ever heard was Invitation, which is a great tune.
Yeah.
Sat down and played that. Then he played other things, and that got me kind of interested, you know. And there I was every day at lunch. So again, from family to my first real job. I'm fortunate enough to be on that floor with those people at that time in my life, to be exposed to it, because nobody from upstairs came down. It was just us in that little particular area.
I hear this a lot from people who, in one way or another, made their life with music, that things conspired. And I'm beginning to think there's some kind of pattern, that it's there over and over again in some odd, bizarre way. It's just there. And this is pretty odd, I mean, one would not expect to be spending one's coffee breaks.
No,
you know, jamming. Listening to jamming exactly
at my first day gig.
Right? Yeah,
I didn't know the word gig at the time.
No, I no, I understand. But truly, no one would not expect that. Okay, yeah. So you have the career in marketing. So how many years are we talking about?
25.
Oh well, that's a serious chunk of time.
Oh, yeah.
I somehow anticipated that you were going to say, oh, I don't know, 5, 8, 10 years. I got tired of it. No, you really did
I
the
enjoyed
thing.
It. I liked
yeah,
it.
You did the thing. And then, so you were singing at night or on weekends?
I did quit for about 7 years, but then I got back into it because the fellow who turned out to be our best man and his wife, my maid of honor, asked me to come sing with him. And it was a cocktail hour, 5:30 to 7:30 at a hotel in St. Louis. And he was considered at the time the best player in town. I said, I can't turn that down. This is crazy. And at that time, I was at this direct mail corporation, and I traveled a lot. And only once did I get stuck. But I could go out on, a 6 a.m. plane to get to a meeting and get out of the meeting and get back to St. Louis in time to make the 5:30 gig.
Oh, my God.
Sometimes barely, but I always made it except that one night. I mean, that's how much I loved it. But again, at the time, didn't plan it, didn't think about it.
No.
Just did it.
Yeah.
And it became a way of life and perhaps not a philosophy, as it were, but I don't ever try to force things. I just don't.
No.
You're stupid to sit in a chair and say, I wish this would happen. I'm waiting. You have to be proactive, and you have to participate in your life. But I trust that if it's supposed to be and I do what I can, then it'll either be or it won't. And not to get all hung up on it, you know. So, and it's always, this is, you know, we're here, knock on wood, serious knock on wood, because to date, I have not been disappointed.
No, and
it's almost scary.
Yeah, I know. I know exactly what you're talking about, and I do think that that's the healthiest way to live. You can't make something that's not going to happen happen.
No.
That's not an option. And so much of our culture is about trying to make things happen that can't happen. And it's counterintuitive, but it makes more sense to do just what you said. Mm-hmm. I'll do what I can, and then it'll happen, or it won't happen, and I won't get my, as the British say, my knickers in a twist.
That's right.
Over it. I think, yeah. I'm sure that that is better for your body and your psyche.
Absolutely. And that, what one thing I did learn in that process, though, is you don't sit back and wait for it to happen either. You move on. And
right.
As you move on, it either happens anyway, or you move on to the next project, or whatever it is you're doing, not necessarily a project. You just live.
Right.
You just go ahead and live.
Right.
And something else will come up, and that might be the catalyst for the thing that you wanted in the first place.
Yeah, yeah.
But you don't know.
No.
So that's why you don't. That's why I don't try to force it, because I really don't know what's going to happen.
It's lovely to hear you say this. It's really lovely. I'm happy for you.
Well, me too, because it
yes.
feels good.
It's so un-American.
And having been in advertising,
oh my God, yes, you know, which is all about trying to get people to do things that they may or may not want to.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly. Maybe you know, who knows? I never really thought about it. I'm not big on analyzing myself, because then I think you can get a little silly too. You know, you get to
yeah.
a point where I try not to overthink or overanalyze anything.
No, but you have awareness.
Yes, that's important.
Yeah, I think it's essential.
And those are the things that pop into my head. I don't sit down and say, okay, this happened, because I have to wait till it's finished. It's a process that could last 20 years before I'm able to figure out why or what, if I even care. But if I decide that I want to figure out how did I get here, like you're asking me,
mm-hmm.
things are popping into my head now that I've never thought of before,
yeah.
because you're setting the stage for my awareness.
Yes. Yeah. And you're open to it.
Oh, see, that, yeah,
that's
absolutely.
The thing. That's the thing that's so lovely, I think, you know. And it's all about trust. That's what I think. It's about that you trust the universe and you trust yourself. You trust that things are as they are supposed to be or good.
Exactly.
Or, right. And some of that may really come from the only child thing. I don't know, but that is one
I
of the...
I don't either.
It's one of the...
I'd have to really think about it and go back, you know. Just in thought, I don't know.
Well,
no hypnosis.
No, we won't do.
No.
We won't do that. No, but did you feel like they loved you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See.
Absolutely. I didn't feel like it. I knew it.
Yeah. Right. See. I mean, that's what shows. It was a safe place.
I always say that I came from the land of yes. I
love that. Oh, God. Well, I mean, it's not rocket science that if you came from the land of yes, you expect the world to be, in some ways, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can trust it.
Mm-hmm.
It's lovely.
Right.
They did a lovely thing
for you. I'm not suspicious.
No, but why
would... Well, I mean...
I understand. You're not foolish.
To a point.
Right, you're not naive.
No.
But you...
I don't think so.
No, you clearly are not.
Mm-hmm.
But you have that quality of being willing to expect the world to be good.
Mm-hmm.
And so, mostly it is.
And I'd like to even work at that.
Mm-hmm.
Because
I believe
there are
you.
Times... And usually it's people related,
mm-hmm.
in one way or another. If it's not the person, it's a situation that involves the people. And I can get a little jaded. And I do, at that point, try to find the good in someone. But I have to say that I don't waste a lot of time on it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have other things to do with my life. So usually if it's uncomfortable after I've given it whatever I consider an adequate try, that's it. I'm through.
Yeah.
On, next.
It's
you,
the same
I like
thing.
You, or you're not my type of person.
Right.
I'll just avoid it, and that you're who you are, and I'm me, and I'm going to go ahead and be me, and maybe it'll work some other time, you know, that kind of thing.
It's the same thing over and over again. It's that you have this really acceptance of yourself and the world, and you're doing the best you can,
mm-hmm.
and the world is doing the best it can, and you can be at ease in it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to make it be something in order for you to be at ease in it. It's really nice.
That's pretty close.
Yeah.
There are things I'd like to make be, but they're not happening now, of course.
That is not to say that you wouldn't want some things that may not work out exactly the way you might want them to, but you have the capacity to do acceptance around that if it doesn't work out.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, so you said, okay, enough with marketing and advertising, and then you took a break, and then you said, let me give my life back to music, or a little, or...
I have to really think this through. Actually, just going back very quickly onto the jazz thing, the only other exposure I had other than that first job was when I was younger. I watched the Arthur Godfrey show with my mother, and I saw Ethel Ennis on that show, and I said to my mother, I don't know what that is, but I want to sing like that. And she didn't know what it was either, so she was no help at all. And it kind of went away, but it came back later. I remembered her and
You still do?
What?
Remember her.
Oh, you bet. What was your question? I wanted to complete that part because to me that was another one of those things that I happened to be in the room at the time she was on singing a song.
Yeah. Again, it's one of those
people don't look at it that way a lot of times.
I do.
But sometimes you don't see it until you go back and mm-hmm. put the little pieces together,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Okay, so I asked when you gave up marketing how you got back into singing.
Never really got out because
I was
in St. Louis and I knew all the musicians and vice versa, so I still got calls. And I just didn't do it because after that, travel, land, come home, change clothes, run to the... It was a little much. I overdid it. And that's when I quit that for a while. Just kind of chilled on the music,
mm-hmm.
and I listened. But then, and then Henry came along,
mm-hmm.
and the end of that story is that we got married, of mm-hmm. course, and moved out to Reno, and he said, why don't you sing? I said, I never thought about it. Yeah, maybe I will. So I talked to a couple of the leaders, and I got a couple of gigs. And this is, again, something that fascinates me personally, because Flip Wilson, the devil made me do it, remember? That's kind of what it is. I don't know where it came from other than osmosis. But I thought, oh, let's see, I think I'll do like jazz. I really didn't know what that meant. So the first time I got up there, I started fooling around with the melody
mm-hmm.
and the time. And somebody thought it was, a couple of the guys thought it was good. So I realized, I realized that there was some inherent talent there,
mm-hmm.
and I realized that that there was probably more in there that I was not aware of.
Yeah.
Something I heard on TV, radio, and I was picking things up and was not aware of it.
Right.
And so that's when I really got into jazz, when I got out west. So that was after we got married in 91. I was doing it a little bit, but I thought I was, but I truly wasn't until I got out there. And I was really exposed to it.
Yeah, I really do think it's, in a way, osmosis.
It has to be. Yeah. And people request songs now, and they'll say, do you know? I'll say, well, I'm not sure. Just a minute. And I have to go bim, 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 to myself. To mumble the words real quick. I think I do. It's a song I've never sung before. Maybe never haven't thought of. Wow. But it's in there somewhere. Now, that doesn't work these days. A song I heard 4 years ago is still there 4 years ago. It didn't soak in. But, you know, so I have to really learn now.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, most of my younger life, it just happened.
Yeah.
Things, I say they just happened, but I know that they didn't just happen. I know I had a part in them. But I don't know it was exactly what it was.
Yeah, other it's than like my you were positive, soaking it up.
Well, I expect good, and I'm also willing to accept it.
Yes.
Because I do have some, and I can say that only because I have a friend who's has a fear of success. Mm-hmm. That once it's achieved, it'll go away. Maybe that's the reason I switch. I don't know.
Say that.
She's afraid if she achieves what she's capable of achieving, it won't last.
So she doesn't pursue it, or she doesn't go
doesn't
flat
pursue
out,
it. You get
right.
close to it, and then, right. see, and I say when I'm doing something, and then I 2 years. Okay, I'm done now. What's next?
Right.
I wondered sometimes if that was the case, that I was afraid of succeeding further and I'd lose my job. But that's not it.
No, it's not.
It really isn't. Because I think back to those jobs, like, so
you
what?
Don't care, right? There's something else around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there has been. So okay, tell me what you're doing now.
Working at Euphemia Hay on Longboat Key.
Tell us when.
On Friday and Saturday. From 7:30 until about 11. We're closed in September. And that, if you want to hear it, is probably the last story I have so far.
Mm-hmm.
In the Fearless department.
Mm-hmm.
And that was that somebody where we lived on Longboat Key in the condo area came to me and she said, would you like to sing at Euphemia Hay? And I said, no. Oh, it sounds fun.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, well, they're looking for some people. So I called Darcy, and she said, well, I think we have, Monday nights, and she said, I think we have someone. But can you drop off a package? Well, that's real standard. You know, that's what everybody says. And I thought, well, they're a mile down the road. So Henry and I drove by there, and I ran in, I gave it to her. And she said, well, can you come in Monday night and audition?
Mm.
And if I hire you, I'll pay you. If I don't, I won't. And I said, okay. And she said, you play piano. And I said, yeah. I don't know why. And I came out and I said, Henry, got to go to Sam Ash right now. I have to have a piano.
Oh, you're kidding.
I said, I need a little portable piano to play. I said, she wants me to. And I didn't tell anybody except Duncan Lamont, who knew about it. And he was the one that encouraged me to do this. So somewhere in there was Duncan pushing me. I guess he's the devil that made me do it. But I said, yes, I can play piano. Rented the piano, showed up. We had a great time. Duncan brought his horn in.
Aww.
He told some people.
Oh, so they came.
And Darcy was there. There was a lot of laughing. And I'm starting my sixth year in December.
Oh, my God.
And I'm learning on the job to play. So that's
a great story.
That's another one of those, if I don't get it, I'll take the piano. I said, to hell, if this doesn't work out, can I return the piano? He said, if you're only going to play it one night, sure.
That's great. That's a great story.
Yeah. I just walked in and said, you know, if I do it, fine, if it works.
Yeah. Yeah. This for me, is a very good place to end this interview. But is there anything that has occurred to you while we've been talking, or anything that occurs to you now that you might want to say about working as a singer, or?
Nothing profound other than I don't know what I would do without it. Mm-hmm. And that's not a fearful comment. I would sing at home.
Yeah.
So when you talked about, when we were speaking before this, you talked about having something happen to your throat.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the worst thing that I could think of.
Yeah.
You know?
And
but then I'd probably play better piano because I'd devote my time to that.
That's right.
You know, I mean, I just figured that there's always something around the corner.
Yeah. Boy, I want to stop right there. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I don't know how I could possibly improve upon that. there are always possibilities, always options, just out of sight, just around the corner. Imagine a singer who loves singing as much as Carol did, whose life is about it, whose work is about it, saying, well, it would be terrible to lose my voice, but then I'd probably play better piano. Imagine the openness of that, the willingness of that, the belief that there's always more to me, and that I can find and nurture and explore and experiment with that more. It was a blessing to know Carol, and it's a loss to have lost her. But to have this, her philosophy, her certainty, her deep connection to herself as a role model is quite wonderful. And I hope that you got as much out of listening to it as I have had doing it and listening to it. So I'm going to play two more songs, I think. One more from Carol's CD, Experiment. I'm going to play I Thought About You, which is a favorite song of mine. But before I do that, I'm going to play a song from a little solo album that Henry Edmund, Carol's husband, drummer, who I also interviewed, and if you go up on my website, you can hear Henry's interview. But he put together a little compilation of piano vocal tracks that Carol did, just her and the piano. And this one is called Scat Singing. It's a song by Duncan Lamont, a dear friend of theirs and mine, and who I also interviewed. You can hear Duncan's interview also on my website. But this is an adorable song, and when Carol does it, she starts it by saying Duncan's scat singing song, and at the end she giggles. It's so Carol. So I'm going to play that. I'm going to follow that with another song from her CD. As I said, I Thought About You. So here is the one, the only, Carol Edmund.
Duncan's little scat singing song. Try a little scat singing. Shubidoop, shubidoop, shubidoop. Be a little cat swinging. Shubidoop, shubidoop, shubidoop. You don't have to sound like Sarah or Cleo, Ella or Miss Peggy Lee. It's all about singing. It's all about swinging. So what if you're a little off key? Try a little scat singing. Shoo-be-doop, shoo-be-doop, shoo-be-doop. Be a little cat swinging. Shoo-be-doop, shoo-be-doop, shoo-be-doop. Well, once you can wail at a blues minor scale, you know you'll be scatting all day. Try a little scat singing. Scat your troubles away. Try a little scat singing. Shoo-be-doop, shoo-be-doop. Be a little cat swinging. Shoo-be-doop, shoo-be-doop, shoo-be-doop. You don't have to sound like Sarah or Cleo, Ella or Miss Peggy Lee. It's all about singing, it's all about swinging. So what if you're a little off key? Try a little scat singing. Shoo-be-doop, shoo-be-doop, shoo-be-doop. Be a little cat swinging. Shoo-be-doop, shoo-be-doop, shoo-be-doop. And once you can wail on a blues minor scale, you know you'll be scatting all day. Try a little scat singing and scat your troubles away. shat your troubles away. Shoulda let up, baba, shoulda let up, da da da, baba. Shut up, shut up, boo.
The one going back to you.
There you have the amazingly versatile Carol Edman. Well, as always, I hope that you got something you can use from this show. I'm certain that you got something to enjoy from this show, because you can't listen to Carol without enjoying it. But also, I hope that you got something to take away from this vibrant person who was with us, admittedly, way too short a time, but when she was here, brought such a positive, such a beautiful spirit, and left such extraordinary gifts of her music behind. And fortunately for me, the interview that captured her experimental essence, her yes-ness. And I realize I have enough time to play a little bit of another song. I'm going to go out on Make Me a Rainbow, another song I didn't know. You could listen to Carol all the time, and every time you heard her, she was singing something that she had found, some nugget, some treasure. But before I end the show, I need to thank, as always, the person who makes this show possible in so many ways, and that is Josh Hackney, my IT guy, my computer guru, the person who fixes the sound, who teaches me how to do whatever it is I can learn, who reminds me what I've learned and then forgotten. So if you have computer, recording, electronic, IT, web questions, needs, you want Josh Hackney, and I realize I didn't give you my website today, so it is thelynshow.com, thelynneshow. Don't leave the E out of Lynn. If you want Josh, that's how you find him. You go up on my website and email me. If you want to ask me any questions or make a comment, you can do that too. If you want to get in touch with Henry Edman, Carol's husband, in order to get some of Carol's music, you can also go up on my website, thelynshow.com, and say, I want to hear more of Carol, and I will make sure that all of that happens. So I hope, as I said, that you heard something that makes you want to come back next week, because I will be here next week, same time, same station, and I sure hope you will be too. Me.
I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So